America's entire first spy mission was a tragicomic failure. The boy Hale, though a veteran ranger, was a scholar at heart who had been raised all his life to be pious and honest. He was simply not up to the task he had so heroically taken on. A little alcohol, a friendly manner, were all it had taken to weasel the truth out of him. As Asher Wright, the last patriot to see him alive, later remarked and in an interview many years later, Hale was too good-looking to go so. He would not deceive. In contrast, one of Roger's subordinates once described him as subtle and deep as hell itself, a low, cunning, cheating, backbiting villain. There could have been no greater contrast between these two men, the spy hunter and the hunted spy. Fortunately, Washington had learned a valuable lesson at the expense of only one good man, a cheap price in the violent world of espionage. He would not forget it while maintaining an extensive, immensely, and now all but forgotten spy network during the remaining years of the war, the notorious Culper Ring. It is one of history's greatest ironies that on 29 October 1777, Washington appointed Major Benjamin Talmadge to succeed his superior, General Charles Scott, in leading his burgeoning espionage service. Talmadge, a young dragoon from the coastal town of Setauket on Long Island, had been Hale's best friend at Yale. His new position provided him with the perfect opportunity to avenge his fallen companion. Talmadge aimed to make the most of it, though not only for the sake of his friend's memory. His commander-in-chief was counting on him. Washington needed spies in New York in October 1777, even more desperately than he had the previous year. Luckily, fate had provided him with the means of achieving his goal only 2 months earlier, Lieutenant Caleb Brewster, Talmadge's old friend. Brewster, a whaleboat man, had secured regular access to British-controlled ports on northern Long Island and had taken it upon himself to inform Washington. In response, the general had quickly appointed Scott, the most able of his immediate subordinates, to serve as Brewster's controller. Despite some initial success, Scott had largely failed to capitalize on the invaluable opportunities Brewster presented. The staunchly by-the-book commander of the Continental Light Infantry had used Brewster merely to aid in carrying out more Nathan Hale-style missions, that is, to ferry one disguised man at a time to Long Island to record firsthand observations. The meager results reflected his painful lack of creativity. In contrast, Talmadge promised success by using his friend as one member of a fixed group of informants whom he would recruit using his local contacts. And he delivered, developing a productive network that was sophisticated even by modern standards. Its name, the Culper Ring, came from the alias Washington and Talmadge chose to disguise the identity of their first agent, Abraham Woodhull, a farmer-turned-smuggler whom Talmadge had tapped while working under Scott. The name they chose for him was Samuel Culper, later Samuel Culper Sr. They adopted the latter after Robert Townsend, a merchant and financier of a popular coffee house in New York, joined the group nearly 2 years later in June 1779. Symbolically, they dubbed him Samuel Culper Jr. Along with Brewster, Woodhull, and Townsend, there were two other so-called Culpers, Austin Rowe, who served as principal courier, and James Rivington, Townsend's business partner. The latter, commissioned as the king's printer in 1777, he was the son of a bookmaker and a bookmaker himself, was on the surface the most ardent of loyalists, so much so that 2 years earlier Isaac Sears had led 75 mounted Sons of Liberty to ransack his press. Indeed, historians have long debated whether this gazetteer of London high society was a patriot spy at all. Evidence, however, suggests that he was. A gambler and a risk-taker, he had by 1779 already fallen into bankruptcy at least once. He had opened his coffee house that year with funding from Townsend as a means of gleaning information for his papers, but to no avail. With income from England cut off and the bankruptcy again looming, he realized, to paraphrase Catherine Crary, that his establishment was as equally suited for espionage as it was for publishing papers. He began selling secrets to his patriotic bankroller as payback against an England that he believed had abandoned him. and in so doing, Rivington became the linchpin of the Culper Ring. One of the first secrets he passed on to Washington was arguably the most important, the code signals used by the British fleet. Rivington notwithstanding, all of the Culpers had grown up together in Setauket, and each trusted the other because of this common background. That trust, so very rare in such enterprises, greatly contributed to their success and longevity as spies. Equally important, however, was the fact that, like Hale before them, they spied out of patriotism rather than for either fame or wealth. Unknowingly echoing his ill-fated predecessor, Woodhull wrote to Talmadge in 1779 on the reasons he was taking on such risks. I quote, "Whenever I sit down, I always feel and know my inability to write a good letter. As my calling in life never required it, nor led to consider how necessary a qualification it was for a man, and much less did I think it would ever fall to my lot to serve in such public and important business as this, and my letters perused by one of the worthiest men on earth. But I trust he will overlook any imperfections he may discover in the dress of my words, and rest assured that I endeavor to collect and convey the most accurate and explicit intelligence that I possibly can, and hope it may be of some service toward alleviating the misery of our distressed country. Nothing but that could have induced me to undertake it, for you must readily think it is a life of anxiety to be within, on such business, the lines of cruel and mistrustful enemy, and that I must ardently wish and impatiently wait for their departure."